Aloha, and welcome to Season 2 of the Hawaii Business Podcast, presented by Servco Pacific. In each episode, we take you behind the scenes with Hawaii's most influential business, community, and cultural leaders. Our guests share their unique career paths and reveal their plans for the future, and you'll hear career, business, and leadership advice that's ideally suited to Hawaii. Let's get started. It's Season 2 of the Hawaii Business Podcast. Here's your host, Anyang Nakata.
Today's episode is presented by Lexus Hawaii. Experience amazing with the all-new 2023 Lexus RX. Completely reimagined to offer a bold new vision of design, technology, and performance. This is the next generation of Lexus. Learn more at LexusHawaii.com. Welcome everybody to another episode of the Hawaii Business Podcast, Season 2. Today, I'm so thrilled to have with me the very beautiful and dynamic three-word name, Emily Reber-Porter. I love that, by the way. Emily Reber-Porter, Chief Operating Officer of the McNaughton Group. Welcome, Emily.
Mahalo for having me.
Oh, I'm so pleased to have you here. So much to talk about. I just so enjoy talking story with you and preparing for today. You've led a very interesting life. And I wondered if you would agree that what I noticed about you and that I very much relate to is that you really love a challenge. You love to work hard, and I'm not going to get all Robert Frost on you, but you never take the easy route.
Yeah, I don't think I've done that on purpose, but I just find a lot of things interesting, and I'm not easily intimidated.
I love that. Oh, I love it. I love it. So where did that come from? And I believe in listening to you, it comes from your parents and your family. So tell me a little bit about them.
Thank you for asking about them. They have been such the foundation of my whole world since growing up as a little girl in Hawaii, in Hawaii Kai. I really respect and am impressed with their character and how they've lived their lives. My father is just a modest, extremely talented, hardworking person who thinks very strategically. If there's an issue, he can always see through to the end, kind of cut to the chase and share in a very humble way how he thinks people should go forward. Mm-hmm. My mom is a tremendously talented pianist who tells us about practicing piano for 3 to 4 hours a day. I can tell you it really paid off for her, not for me, because I have no natural talent. So I think watching my parents, observing them as a child, I was fortunate to understand that people are capable, and if you put your mind and your hard work to things, you can accomplish anything you want.
Oh, I'm just, it was really beautiful because as parents, we, what you just described and how you feel about your parents and how they inspired you, and you never talked about titles or money, by the way, I noticed, right? And what they achieved in their career. We can only hope that our children, right, speak of us in even 10% of what you just did for your parents. So
I sure hope
right.
So.
I know, right? Oh my goodness.
I'm crossing my fingers right now.
That was beautiful. I know, right? So Evan and Cameron for you and Mia for me, if only they could speak like that about us, you know, 10, 20 years from now, that would be really, really heartwarming. Okay. So I learned that your mother's family, they've been in Hawaii since 1904. They worked at the plantations, but you were actually born in California.
Yes, that is true. It's a secret that I have to share often when people say, oh, you're born and raised in Hawaii. I say, well, technically, I was born in Pasadena, California. My parents met on the East Coast when they were in graduate school. Uh-huh. And then they lived in Southern California. When I was born, my mom said, okay, time to move back home to Hawaii. My father's from Southern California, but agreed to move to Hawaii to raise their family.
Your mom was like, okay, it's time.
Yeah, it's time.
We get baby. We got to move.
We got to move. Exactly. And it's funny because it's been something that I've had to explain so many times in my life that after we had our first son in Hawaii, mm-hmm. we moved to Washington, D.C. and became pregnant with our second son. I flew home, 1 month early to Hawaii from D.C.
To have your baby here?
To have my second son here, because I knew eventually he would move home. And I wanted both of them to be able to say that they're born and raised in Hawaii and not have to use extra words.
Oh, my goodness. You're welcome, Evan and Cameron.
Yes,
oh,
Cameron in particular.
That is amazing. That is amazing. So okay, you're so interesting. So you had the great opportunity to attend Punahou. You played tennis, you body surfed, you sailed, you danced hula, jazz, ballet, and competitively for Tahitian. This was just really eye-opening. So I don't know when you slept or when you did schoolwork, but you did it all, which I think you don't even think you did enough. So that's just so amazing. And you mentioned that your mom is a natural pianist and strongly encouraging you to practice piano. It really taught you a lot about grit and perseverance.
Oh, for sure. When you have a naturally talented pianist as your mother and you have no talent but desire, that teaches you a lot of grit. I remember practicing piano at home and, you know, missing notes all the time. And I'd hear from the other end of the living room.
She could hear it.
B flat. C sharp.
Oh, my goodness.
Yes.
And she could be doing anything.
She could be doing anything and she would just hear it. But I really love that it's an activity that my mother loved and I got to understand. And when I get less busy in life, I will go back to piano. We have a piano in our home that was my mom's teacher's piano.
Oh, wow.
And when he was passing, he asked my mom if she would purchase it from him because she was one of his favorite students. And
oh,
so she
wow.
gave me that piano and I do, you know, play a little bit on it from time to time.
And you kind of chuckle to yourself when you miss the note?
Oh, yes, of course, which happens often. I'm laughing a lot when I practice.
And you hear her voice in your head.
Exactly. But, you know, when I would miss those notes, I would just stretch, you know, into a big back bend off of the bench. And I'm thinking, dancing might be a little bit better for me.
Okay, so after Punahou, you head to Princeton and you choose to focus on public and international affairs with a certificate on East Asian studies, particularly focused on Japan. And then I asked you why, and then you said because it was the only major you had to apply to and you wanted to challenge yourself. And I said, okay, this lady has something. So tell us about that.
Sure. I went to Princeton because it's a great school and it's far away from home. Growing up in Hawaii, I thought, hey, I want to live here someday for the rest of my life. But in the interim, I want to go experience something, challenge myself, spread my wings. And so I wanted to go really far away. That's why I chose Princeton. And then I just stuck with the theme. What do I want to major in? Well, there were a few things of interest to me, politics, economics, etc. But the Public and International Affairs School, which was a graduate school at Princeton, was the only major you had to apply to. So I thought, I'm going to keep challenging myself and I'm going to apply to it. Also, when I left Hawaii, I feel like my conscious appreciation for Hawaii really grew. And studying public and international affairs was actually a way for me to study Hawaii through that lens. And East
I
Asian
see that. That's really beautiful.
With all the Asian cultures was of interest to me as well.
Mm-hmm. That's really beautiful. And it didn't dawn on me when I first learned that, but, you know, thank you for sharing it that way.
Sure.
So after Princeton, I learned that, again, here's the pattern. Here is the pattern. So you had three opportunities. One, to go to law school. Two, to join a management consultancy firm. Both really sexy. And then three, you had a Fulbright grant opportunity to study and live in Osaka, Japan. And just for our listeners, the Fulbright program was founded by a U.S. Senator, J. William Fulbright, in 1946, and is considered to be one of the most widely recognized and prestigious scholarships in the world. And according to Wikipedia, the program provides approximately 8,000 grants annually. And it's one of several U.S. cultural exchange programs. And of course, to strengthen intercultural relations, diplomacy, and, you know, competence between the U.S. and other countries. So I wonder if our listeners can guess which one you chose. Management consulting, sexy, lots of money, law school, linear trajectory, or the Fulbright grant in Osaka. And what did you choose?
I went to Osaka.
Of course you did. So tell us about that and why.
Sure. I thought that even though I was interested in law school and management consulting, those could happen later in life. This was my one opportunity to spread my wings even further and fly across the continent and the ocean and live in a foreign country all on my own, called Hitorigurashi in Japanese. I lived in a small town called Minamisumiyoshi and was able to attend a school at a university there, Osaka Ichiritsu Daigaku. And I studied really human rights when I was there, and civil rights. It was very fascinating.
And what do you mean? Because I'm humbly sharing with you, my family and I went to Osaka once, and the first layer for tourists, the phenotype is Osaka is not Tokyo. It's more relaxed, really great food, really nice people. So what do you mean you were studying human rights? What was going on?
Sure. Well, like every country, there is a long history, and I think there's probably aspects of discrimination everywhere across the globe. It's not particular to the United States or Japan, so I just wanted to lean into that and understand it a little bit more, because I'm a big believer in people and fairness and justice, and I don't like to see discrimination happening, although it does all over the place. In Japan, there is something called Doa Mondai or Buraku Mondai. It stems from the Tokugawa era, and it's basically a caste system that wasn't really written too much about in English at the time. So I wanted to learn more about it. I thought it could shed light on just my understanding of people, human nature, discrimination there and in the U.S. and elsewhere. So I went to study it. It had to be mostly in Japanese because, again, there was almost nothing written about it in English. So I read. I spoke to a professor of Japanese.
Wait, did you speak Japanese before you went?
I studied Japanese starting in ninth grade.
Oh, good. Okay.
Yes. And then I studied it at Princeton, too.
Okay. So you kept up with it.
Yes.
Okay.
Even though I'm Chinese, I spoke Japanese because we had a lot of friends from Japan who would visit our families during the holidays. And I thought, you know, I'm not able to speak to all of the members of the family because they're speaking Japanese. I better take that and speak to them. So
That's neat.
It was a wonderful year. It was enlightening. It was rigorous. I started dreaming in Japanese, which made me so happy. Felt like I'd really arrived. But it was very lonely at times, too, because I was on my own, the sort of only gaijin foreigner around in this small town.
Wow. So you brought up something really interesting, which is this idea that you can be at once very, very fulfilled, very challenged, have a great meaning, but be lonely at the same time.
Yes, it was such a strange phenomenon. I would have periods where I was just deeply lonely there by myself, feeling like a fish out of water. Other times I would feel like a part of the community and the neighborhood and the student body. I actually danced in a hip-hop dance company at the school there.
Of course you did.
But at the same
time.
In my free time. But all throughout it, I knew I was doing something so important and meaningful. Actually, when I came back to the States and I went to law school, I ended up publishing a law review article in the Harvard Human Rights Journal about this topic. And it was the most extensive piece written in English about it at the time. And now there's been a lot more written about it, which makes me happy to know that maybe I made a little bit of a difference.
Right. That's so, so neat. And I wonder that kind of that pain and suffering and loneliness, I don't think it's a bad thing. I don't know. Some people might remember me saying I'm anti-happy. I'm more fulfilled, and I think that these highs and lows make a lot of other things sweeter. And so I wonder if you look back on that time, very multi-layered. You know?
Absolutely. I mean, I think that's the fabric of life, and that's what makes things interesting. You need time to yourself to reflect. In those lonely periods, you become very introspective. And
that's why some people say to travel alone.
Yes.
Which I think is so courageous.
I actually did that recently.
Oh,
kind
did you?
Of. I went on a bike tour through the Omidyar Fellows Program.
Cool.
And I was the only person, it was kind of in a group of people I didn't know, but who was by myself. And they said, "You're so brave." I said, "What do you mean? I'm traveling with a tour group." That's not very brave. But just being alone.
Yes. Yes. With
strangers. I think was strange to them. And I said, "You know, you don't have to invite me to your table at lunch, etc. I'm wanting to have some time alone to think, to reflect. I will have my journal with me. It's okay."
Good for you. Good for you for saying that. Wow. Okay. So after your Fulbright grant in Osaka, you go back to one of your pathways, right? And you went to law school, and you shared with me that your dear father is an alum. So tell me about your time at law school and why you chose litigation.
Sure. Well, as I mentioned earlier, I respect my father tremendously, his character and his way of thinking. I knew that a lot of his way of thinking was innate, but I thought that law school also probably shaped his way of thinking, and I wanted to learn how to think like he did. So I felt law school would be a good fit for me. I also care about fairness and justice and equality. And so I went to law school. But when I graduated, I thought, you know, I'm a little more fiery than my dad. He's much more calm, cool, and collected. And he's a corporate attorney. So maybe that means I should be the other kind of attorney, a litigator. So that's the path that I started on and really, truly enjoyed.
Yeah, that's so neat. That's so neat. And I also learned that your husband is an attorney, right?
Yes.
He's in JAG.
Well, he moved to Hawaii as a Navy JAG
uh-huh.
and served his term here. And then he became an assistant U.S. attorney, so it's a federal prosecutor here in Hawaii. Then did so for Maine Justice in D.C., working on the biggest cases around the country. And then when we moved to San Francisco, became a law professor. And then when I decided to move us home, he had to switch careers again.
To have all of your children.
Yes.
So they could be born here.
Right. They had been born here. They just had to be raised here next, right? So he became an educator here in Hawaii and then now is a federal magistrate judge. So he has had, you know, a really tremendously fulfilling career as well, not on one linear path. But yes, we both have a legal background.
That's really neat. I can only imagine the arguments.
Oh, you
Do
know.
You get like legal pads out. I'll see you in 15 minutes.
We learned early on.
Look at this electric bill. That's you.
Okay, some of that sounds vaguely familiar. But we did learn early on that we are skilled at the art of verbal war, and we really had to put that weapon down early on in our relationship to make sure everything would go well.
That is hilarious. So you have been, you've had the tremendous opportunity to be an executive, the chief operating officer now at McNaughton Group for 7.5 years. But prior to that, I learned that you had the great opportunity, and I love this story because I think it's so translatable to others and what I believe, you know, people like me and you, we try to impress upon others who are maybe 5, 10, 15 years earlier in their career, which is you had the tremendous opportunity to be at a startup in San Francisco. And you, I mean, you did everything. You were employee number 20. You were there the entire time. And so you touched obviously legal, customer service, website security, online operations, HR, strategic planning, and then finance and accounting. And you're probably the janitor and the marketing and, you know, the receptionist and everything, right? I mean, why not? You just described every department to me. But what I think is so neat and I'd like to listen to you about is I wonder if, and that's not when it started, but I believe that's when you really like honed your skills, sharpened your knives in your love for people, your ability to communicate, your generalist mindset, and you're very adaptable, collaborative, and you are uber committed to breaking down silos, right?
Wow, that sounded really nice. Thank you so much. I hope half of that is true. Yes, I think as a lawyer, you learn how to think very well, methodically, strategically, and also you learn how to communicate in writing and verbally. And then when you go to a startup, you have to learn everything else, how to work with people, how to collaborate, how to be innovative, how to problem solve with technologies that you know nothing about. So I felt like that was another opportunity where I got to spread my wings, and it felt amazing. As a lawyer, which I loved being, I felt like I was mostly in my head, right? And when I went to this startup, I felt like I was using way more of myself.
That's so neat.
It was wonderful.
Yeah. For some reason, not that I think you're like Ursula, like the sea witch or anything like that.
Oh,
but
no.
When you were talking, I for some reason, I got this visual of like an octopus using all, and they're so intelligent, right? And an octopus using like all eight tentacles at the same time, right? So before you were, I don't know, a different cephalopod or something. Okay. Not that you're a sea witch. Not at all.
Well, thank you very much. Okay. I'm going to forget that metaphor. That's perfect.
But you're the smartest invertebrate in the sea.
Oh, yeah. Good to know. Yeah. Okay. I might adopt that then. How wonderful.
So you were using all eight tentacles at the same time.
Yes.
Musically.
And it felt great. And I started off just using one mm-hmm. or two. And then over time, you know, you say, hey, something's going on over there that might be able to be improved. Let me extend
exactly.
into that area. And then this. So maybe that's
exactly.
why
you're
it made so
you're
much
welcome.
Sense. Perfect.
Yeah.
Perfect visual.
Yeah. The octopus is very cool. Okay.
All right. I'm going to remember that for Halloween.
So what I understand next is that you're like, okay, it's time to come home, right? Time to come home. There's a reason why I flew home to have my bebes there.
Right. Exactly.
Now it's time to like live there and go home and make a difference in my home. And you've been at McNaughton ever since. So tell me about your, how that's been. It's because it's been 7.5 years, which, you know, don't you find that sometimes when something is so fun, meaningful and challenging that it feels like a blink of an eye, but also forever?
Yes,
yeah.
I think that's true. I mean, I think more of a blink of the eye because the kids have also grown up so quickly in that same time.
I think
time
one's taller
frame.
Than you.
They are both taller
tremendous.
Than I am.
Yes.
My little 9th grader and 11th grader are not so little anymore. They both tower over me and sometimes stand on their tippy toes to really prove the point, especially when I'm in heels. Yeah, so we decided to move home, unfortunately, right after my husband got tenure at Golden Gate University School of Law. He's forgiven me by now, but we really wanted to raise our children in this community. And also, we felt like we were at a point in our careers where we could contribute more broadly to everybody around us, and it would be most meaningful to do it here in Hawaii, where we met, fell in love, got married, and had our first son. So, you know, it's been a wonderful ride. I feel like at McNaughton, I work with wonderful people who have values, you know, rooted in family and community. They're also highly innovative. So I got the best of both worlds in moving from San Francisco, you know, startup capital, to Hawaii, which I loved, in joining McNaughton. They have the Hawaii spirit as well as the innovation that is not always the norm in Hawaii, but I think we are getting so much stronger with that muscle here too.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Well, being the metaphorically smartest invertebrate with the eight tentacles, it makes a lot of sense now. So you first joined as EVP of Operations and Strategy, and of course, quickly 1 year later, they were like, okay, so she's the smartest invertebrate. We need to make her COO. So what I understand, I've come to learn, is that the McNaughton Group is truly a group. So you folks have retail locations, Kapolei Commons, Mauna Loa Shopping Center, Stadium Marketplace, Kona Commons on the Big Island. You have hotels, the Lotus and Renew. You have, you know, gifting programs related to your hotels and other physical locations. Of course, the McNaughton Group have always had the franchises, Starbucks and Jamba Juice. You have played a very large hand in standing up the McNaughton Foundation, which gives grants to nonprofit organizations. Of course, McNaughton Inc. supports the community with sponsorships. And, you know, overarching, what I understand is it's what you said, is that you folks are committed to strengthening and diversifying the local economy. And you have the great privilege of not having strict guardrails. So it's what makes sense, obviously, for your company and your employees first, right?
Yes.
But then how great is that to be able to have that freedom? And it sounds like wonderful. You take the responsibility it's not a burden. It's a wonderful responsibility. That's my sense.
Absolutely. You know, it's funny when you said that, it reminded me of something I heard recently. I went out to the Waianae Boat Harbor and was looking with some folks at the sort of wonderful community that was being built there, that had been built there. And the phrase is, kuleana awakens mana.
Wow.
And I felt like that is so powerful. Obviously, mana powerful, but that whole concept that when you feel responsible for something, when you feel like there is a purpose, it really awakens your power to make a difference and to work with others to, you know, be the change and to achieve the change. So I apply that sort of everywhere I can. I hadn't heard that phrase before, but it
Thank
really
you for
resonated
sharing
with
it.
Me. You're very
yeah,
welcome.
It's really beautiful. It's really yeah. beautiful. So let's take a short break and hear from our presenting sponsor, Servco Pacific. And when we get back, I'd love to listen to you about, you know, what we can look forward to from the McNaughton Group going forward. And also in the, you know, what you folks are trying to do and impact in the affordable housing space. And of course, we have to talk about our bond in the community service arena with combating domestic violence. So we'll take a short break. See everybody in just a little bit. Today's episode is presented by Lexus Hawaii. Owning a Lexus goes beyond the joy of driving a luxury vehicle. It's a lifestyle. Experience amazing as a Lexus owner. Starting with the Lexus Takumi Master Craftsman, each specializes on a particular element of the production of your very own vehicle and has at least a quarter century of experience in their field. The Takumi's meticulous attention to detail, belief in excellence, and a superior quality are unmatched. Lexus Hawaii owners are also invited to join Lexus Perks by Servco. Enjoy unparalleled experiences at exclusive events and receive special offers just for being a Lexus owner. To learn more and experience amazing, visit LexusHawaii.com. Welcome back, everybody. Today we have Emler Reber-Porter, Chief Operating Officer of the McNaughton Group. Welcome back. How was the break for you?
Oh, it was well deserved, I think.
It was so amazing.
You're a really tough interviewer.
Okay, so as we touched on, let's talk a little bit more about the McNaughton Group. But tell me more about what you have going forward. And in particular, I'm just going to be honest with you. I was quite surprised for you to share earlier that you folks want to make an impact in the affordable housing space. Not because I'm judging you or anything, but just I just was ignorant and the branding, I just was not ready for that pivot. So I'm really interested. So tell me about that.
Sure. It's actually very much in keeping with the values of McNaughton and the family. As I mentioned, they're deeply rooted in Hawaii and care very much about the community. All the projects that we do are meant to be beneficial to the people of Hawaii, employment, jobs, housing, and that's really just another area that we think is very much needed in Hawaii. So we are going to definitely be continuing to look around and see what the needs are of the community. We are going to continue in hospitality with hotel ownership and operation as well. That is such an important part of our community, and we want to do it in a way that is true to our values.
Mm.
We also care very much about housing, and it's really across the spectrum.
Mm.
We believe in the housing ladder, you know, more housing overall, supply and demand will help reduce prices and allow for more local people to stay here.
Mm-hmm.
So I think you'll see a lot more from McNaughton in housing, hospitality, yet we won't go too far from our commercial roots in retail as well. It's again supporting the community in all of its needs.
Yeah, and I'm so grateful for that. So tell me about, because I was learning, and so you said, well, the AMI. I said, pardon me, what is an AMI? So AMI stands for adjusted median income, and that there are, of course, different brackets. And so tell me about the bracket that you folks will likely target.
Sure. I mean, again, it's important to have more housing across the board, and people are coming up with so many innovative solutions mm-hmm. now to housing. We will see what happens. Pu'uhono Awai and I, they have a wonderful solution that they're building out right now. 60% and below AMI has certain tax credit programs that are available in the state of Hawaii. And those tax credits typically are used up annually. And that's a space that we could be involved in. The one that I think is quite interesting and very much in need is also the 80 to 120 or 140% AMI. There are some special programs also sponsored by the state and supported by the city that allow for certain variances or just changes to the zoning to allow you to build more density if you provide over 50% affordable units in the build. So that is an area where I think in certain locations it would make sense.
That's already developed.
Well, that legislation is available. It's honestly still a little bit clunky and hard to work with.
I bet.
We also, you know, face communities that are really interconnected and close and like things how they are. So anytime there's change, I think it's an education process. It's a
because we have to bring the community along.
Exactly.
Right.
Exactly.
Right. 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 It may be a slightly slower start, but you have a greater chance of success then.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. And a lot of times, folks don't realize that affordable housing in the 80, 120, 140% AMI are people who are your friends and brothers and sisters and your teachers and firefighters.
We're talking about our middle-income firefighters, policemen, teachers, right?
Yes.
The citizens of our community.
All the kinds of people that you want to have living right next to you.
I want a fireman next to me. Wait, that didn't sound right.
Yes, in my backyard is what we want.
I meant for safety.
Absolutely. I hear you.
That's really neat. And, you know, thank you to McNaughton Group for, you know, venturing into that. Because my humble opinion is you don't have to.
Right.
You can just stay where you are. Right. So it's really a commitment, like you said.
Thank you very much.
And the values back into the community.
Yes. Well, wish us luck. It's a lot of work, but it's well worth the effort. We hope we will be able
to do more.
But you
like that kind of thing.
I should do. You do know me.
Okay, so let's talk about the community. So your list is too long to list of your past and present, but just a few is, this was really interesting. So Oahu Transportation Services, the bus, Kulo Ranch, of course, this is really cool. You're a trustee at Punahou, your alma mater. You're on the board of the Outrigger Canoe Club. But let's talk about your service to Child and Family Services, because this is where you and I intersect wonderfully. I have the great privilege of serving on the board of the Domestic
Violence Action Center.
Domestic Violence Action Center. And Frank, and you used to be on the DVAC board,
yes,
correct? When
yes.
you were an attorney and then you went away and you came back and now you're on the CFS board. So let's talk about both of our commitment and passion to combat domestic violence.
Absolutely. Thank you so much for bringing that up. When I moved back to Hawaii, I remember Mitch Dollier said, you will be asked to serve on many boards. Make sure you're passionate about what they do, because this is work you're going to be doing for free, taking time away from your family as well. And so I took a year to survey the landscape and then approached CFS actually to see if they would have an interest in me joining their board.
Yeah. I just love that. So I just want to make sure to highlight what you said, because I really think it's, my opinion, profound. Anyone who's listening, they don't have to wait to be asked to the prom. If they want, they have a passion and they want to give of themselves to an organization, do what you did, right?
Thank you.
Contact them.
Sure. Reach out. I mean, there is a lot of need for support of our community organizations. I feel like, you know, the need is growing in so many areas. And if you're passionate about something, isn't that the best place to contribute? And wouldn't, you know, the organization want to know that this is your primary focus? So yes, I reached out. Luckily, they allowed me to learn more about the organization and invited me on. And what I love about Child and Family Service, as well as what I love about Domestic Violence Action Center, is that a lot of their work relates to helping people out of situations that are dangerous for them, intimate partner violence. Domestic Violence Action Center does it more with legal tools as well as other services, but that is sort of the core of what they're known for. And CFS does it in a variety of ways, and I believe those organizations do partner as well.
Yes.
I was hoping that, you know, Nancy Creedman, and out of, you know, the decades of service, would be able to see a declining number of people in these situations.
Well, unfortunately, due to COVID, we saw an increase, right?
I know. It is so upsetting. And that's why I think in the next chapter of my service, what mm-hmm. I'd really like to focus on is how do we get the numbers to decline
mm-hmm.
so that we don't have as much of a need for the services helping people who are already in these bad situations. And I think that really comes down to education.
Absolutely. We need to attack it from lots of different angles. And one of the critical angles is upstream,
yes.
right? So while organizations like DVAC and others are remedying, because they provide survivor advocacy, crisis support, safety planning, risk assessment, the legal helpline, legal representation, financial assistance, accompaniment to court, housing, support groups, consultation, and training, this is once it's occurred, right?
Right, exactly.
So the upstream is critical.
So critical. And I feel like that hasn't been so much of a focus in the past. And it's just necessary to eliminating this problem. You know, my hope is that there's no need for DVAC in the future. Nancy Creedman, I'm sure, would say that as well.
I've actually heard her say that.
Yes, mm-hmm. she wants to put herself out of a job, which is mm-hmm. a great idea. So I've actually been in conversations with Karen Tan from CFS and Nancy Creedman and some other folks who are passionate about this. And we are going to be moving forward with some education-related initiatives.
That is awesome. That is awesome. Well, I am right there with you. You know, you and I committed to talking about this because we feel so passionate about it. And this is not to lecture our friends and family, but this is to share information, right? Please allow me to share a few data points. And this is just one day, not 1 week, not 1 month, not 1 year, one day. 100 by DVAC, 153 calls with clients, 100 legal consultations, 61 safety plans, and that's escape, a safety plan to escape, 115 referrals to other agencies. This is a single day. It's just tremendous.
It's devastating.
And I bring this up with a plea, a request. Let's hurrah, let's do it together to the greater community. So as a board member, I received the annual report in the mail. And, you know, I'm looking at the financial results page. And when we look at the revenue pie chart, a great portion of the support comes from the state of Hawaii. So thank you, state of Hawaii. And then federal. And then the city. And when I look at the community support and foundation grants and partners portion, it is 20%. Mm. And this is not a criticism. This is a let's do it, right? Let's do this all together. And I wonder if decision makers at different organizations and managers and everybody in between, if we, much like Bettina and I talked about sex trafficking in Ho'olohanapua, we have to admit that this is happening
yes.
to our friends, to our colleagues, to our managers, to our team members, and it affects us all. This is not a they problem. This is an us problem, and it affects the bottom line.
It's a huge cost to our community in so many ways, certainly in the workplace, but in the families, which spills over to the schools. This is a huge problem, not to mention it's just wrong. It shouldn't happen. People should be able to be safe in their homes. Their children should not have to witness intimate partner abuse. People should not be controlling other people. People need to have their own agency. They need to let their light shine. This is not okay. It's happening so frequently throughout our community, and we absolutely need to admit it's happening and take a stand and educate everybody about this so that it can happen a lot less in the future.
Absolutely. I know that you and I are going to follow our already started trajectories on the respective boards, but I hope that others listening today and joining us are inspired to learn more,
yes.
to give when they can, mm-hmm. to volunteer when they can, and to open up their eyes and their hearts.
Absolutely. When yeah. we come out with education opportunities here, I'm hoping that the listeners will be willing to take a listen and
yes.
learn a little bit more.
And Child and Family Services and Domestic Violence Action Center are two great places to start.
Fantastic.
Yeah.
Correct.
Okay. Well, tall Emily and short on Young, we look very different, but lots of commonalities, and we could talk forever.
Yes.
But before we say goodbye, my season 2 question is, If you could be reincarnated, what animal would you return as and why?
Oh my goodness. Well, that is a tough one.
Don't say octopus, because you're already the smartest invertebrate in the sea.
What animal would I return as? Jeez. I mean, I am a tiger in terms of my Chinese horoscope. And if I could actually be a tiger, that would be really fun, because then I could live how I feel a lot. I like having impact, making a difference, being bold, being a little ferocious, but all for good.
Oh, I love that. I love that. Thank you so much, Emily, and have a beautiful day. And thank you again for taking your time to talk story with us.
It was my pleasure. Thank you so much for having me.
You've been listening to the Hawaii Business Podcast, presented by Servco Pacific. If you're a new listener, be sure to subscribe wherever you get your podcasts or visit us at hawaiibusiness.com. If you like this episode, leave us a rating or review. Again, I'm your host, Anyang Nakata. Mahalo for joining us today, and see you next time.